We acknowledge the traditional owners and custodians of the land on which company has been recorded, the Whadjuk people of the Noongar Nation.
We respect their continuing culture and the past and present contributions they have made to this region. Sovereignty was never ceded.
You're listening to Company, the podcast connecting Australian artists,
where we talk all things professional, personal, and spiritual.
Joining you as always are your hosts, Georgia Kennedy
and Tiana Catalano. Hello and welcome back to Company. It's been a little while, but we're so excited to get back into it today.
We're super keen to get back into it, and it's been so lovely to talk to you guys again and to be able to have conversations with people over Zoom. It's been really fun, actually.
Yeah, especially I think Georgia and I thought that it was going to be like really chill, like once we graduated, like, yeah, we'll be able to like jump straight back into it and talk to people all the time. But it's been crazy. Like, it's been nuts. I'm not even moved into state yet. I'm still like in Adelaide seeing family since I hadn't seen them for so long. So yeah, very excited. And we got Mia Morrissey this week.
We do. It was a super exciting chat with her and just really real. We got to talk about a lot of stuff that I think we don't talk enough about within this industry in terms of how we view our bodies and what is body positivity or body neutrality and how can we move forward and have, you know, real and honest conversations about bodies on stage.
Yeah, totally. Well, before we do that, shall we jump into a riff?
Yes, we should.
Are you ready? Okay. Riff of the week. Riff
of the week. All right, I'll go first. I was tossing up what riff to do because it's been a while and there's been a lot of stuff that I've been watching and listening to, but I love this singer called Doty. She's a UK singer, and I guess, how would I describe her stuff? It's really sort of soft acoustic kind of music, but she's got this just beautiful tone and this beautiful voice that's really different. I've loved her for a while, but she just released a new song called I Kissed Someone, It Wasn't You, and it's beautiful, and the production is stunning as well. So if you're wanting like a nice chill song that's also kind of sad, but you kind of love it, I'd definitely recommend Doty's new song.
Funny you say that, because I actually was going to do a musical riff as well this week. Not a musical, but music. Chris Stapleton, and people probably know him best for Tennessee Whiskey, that song.
Oh, yeah.
He's a country singer. And it's something that my boyfriend and I have been listening to a lot, and his new album, Starting Over, I don't know if it's like new, but it's his newest album, is so good. He sings with his wife, which I think is just like so nice. They're just like a duo. She's the only kind of backing vocals that he has. And they just, their voices together, they're so in sync. If you can actually watch their Tiny Desk performance, that is like so good. So yeah, if you're feeling a bit of country, bit of blues, bit of something different, I definitely suggest to listen to that.
Nice. I love a good Tiny Desk concert, so I'll have to check it out.
Yes, definitely.
Mia is a Sydney-based actor who grew up within the performing arts sector. Being no stranger to the entertainment industry, Mia Morrissey started working as an actor at the age of 16 when she starred in the critically acclaimed short film Bat Eyes, which featured in the Venice Film Festival. Following this, Mia went on to study acting full-time at WAPA. Since graduating, Mia has appeared in a number of works including ABC's Harrow, Alice in Slasherland, Home and Away, and most recently played the role of Mimi in Rent at the Sydney Opera House.
Mia has also started The Gained Project, a platform that celebrates all that our bodies do and champions the notion that we are bigger than what our bodies look like, with the hashtag WhatHaveYouGained. You can check out our episode description for a full list of Mia's credits. Just a little disclaimer before we begin. As we said, we are Zooming from all over the country, so glitches, bit of audio quality might be a bit out, but we tried our best, so hopefully it's all good for you.
Hey, Mia, thank you so much for coming on the show. We're so excited to be starting up our podcast again with you.
Thanks for having me. It's such an honour to be welcoming you guys back.
Fabulous. Yes. Now we like to start every episode asking about any arts recommendations that you have. So what have you been listening to or reading or watching at the moment that you really love?
Oh, well, I actually only just, I know this is absurd and I'm so late to the game, but I only just got into podcasts. And so I've just been listening to like Jamila Jamil's I Weigh podcast, who is obviously like a literal goddess. But it's extraordinary. It's so good. And then I also got gifted a book called Show Me Where It Hurts by Kylie Maslin or Maslin. I'm not sure how to pronounce her last name, but it's about living with endometriosis and chronic illness. And it's just like the most honest depiction of endometriosis or chronic illness that I've ever read. Anyone who has it, like who has endo, read it and you'll feel so seen. And anyone who wants to understand endo at all, I would so advise reading it. It's like so refreshing to read. Oh, I'm like covering all the bases. Music, Bruno Major, Ben Lonclosol, Sammy Ray. I should stop.
Perfect.
No,
I love it. Yeah, that. I'd love to read that book.
It's really, really good. It makes me, as a like person with a mutant uterus, very happy.
Yeah, wow. I guess we'll touch on that kind of stuff later, because that's one of the things I love about you, your willingness to be so open about endometriosis online, how inspiring that would be for, you know, women in the industry. It's crazy. And we'll talk about it later. But before we do that, what is a piece of art that really moved or changed you?
Oh, this is such a strange answer. Honestly, I watched Star Wars when I was a kid, and I was like so transported by the fact that this was I'm such a sci-fi nerd. I love it so much because you can create kind of new rules. You can create a new version of reality. And Star Wars was this like of literally otherworldly expression of strength, and Princess Leia was just like the ultimate badass. And I remember watching it going, oh my god, this is the most ridiculous circumstance, and I believe everything. I want to be in ridiculous circumstances and make them feel real. Genuinely Star Wars probably changed my life. While we're on the topic of nerdy things, Neil Gaiman is a like fantasy writer, and he's the most articulate human being I've ever read or heard in my life. And he does this speech called the Make Good Art speech, and that changed my life. I've like got it tattooed and everything. But it's essentially just about the process of an artist making art out of everything and anything, and how good art doesn't have to start off as good. It's just creating something out of, you know, where you are. And so watch it. It's on YouTube.
Beautiful. Amazing.
That sounds so good. It's actually so funny beautiful. When you mentioned the Star Wars thing and that you're kind of in this like fantastical world. That is literally musical theater. I think that all the time. I sit through a musical and I'm just like, it makes total sense that you just started doing a tap dance. That's just like the only thing you could have done in that situation. Yes. But you just totally buy into it. It's so good.
Oh, absolutely. It's like both. I think that's why I love musical theater and sci-fi and fantasy so much, because human beings have such like this enormous breadth of emotion that of course the only way that we can express them is through like like song and dance or a like spaceship in the middle of nowhere. Like we need things outside of reality to express the like enormity of us.
That's really well put. I have to say I watched Lord of the Rings for the first time a couple weeks ago, and I had the same feeling of, oh my god, this world is so real. These actors are incredible. Doesn't feel like they're acting. I'm just so immersed in this world. So I totally get what you felt with Star Wars and
it's being immersed in it. People, you hear actors talk so much about like all of the actors who have gotten Oscars for these incredibly like really raw, authentic performances of someone in a real life situation. And I'm like, where are all of the Oscars for the people in like Star Trek? who have to walk on set and scream at aliens and make that believable. Like, you know what? I'm putting it out there. Like, someone nominate Chris Pine for an Oscar for Star Trek, because that was right there.
Chef's kiss. So good. Now, the next question that we like to ask is, do you have any funny mishap stories? So is there something that's happened backstage or on stage that has maybe not gone 100% to plan?
Oh God, I have so many. just recently in Rent, I fell over on stage so many times. Like, one time at the end of Out Tonight, I was like meant to be going down these stairs and I tripped on my pants and I fell down like all the stairs, like out of my life. And then I like jumped back up and I'm like, woo, no one saw anything. It was so absurd. But this one's pretty gross. How gross are you? Are we ready?
Yeah, we're ready.
I'm putting a little like disclaimer for anyone who likes metal straws. But I was doing, I know, I'm so sorry, everyone, but there are eco-friendly other options. Use rubber straws, everyone. So I was doing this show, called Alice in Slasherland at the Old Fitz, and I was warming up beforehand and I was like kind of sitting on the floor and like humming through my metal straw, and someone like knocked me forward. Like, not their fault at all, but someone just kind of knocked me forward a bit and I leant forward and the straw in my mouth hit the floor and then it like impaled the roof of my mouth. And that, yeah, I know, it's so horrific. And then I like had this moment of shock and I just kind of went, oh God, I think I'm fine, because it didn't hurt. It was just a feel sensation. And then someone came over and was like, Mia, are you okay? And I opened my mouth and blood just came like pouring out of my mouth, like a horror movie. And then this is the grossest part. There was like a little bit of my roof of my mouth like hanging down, because I just like impaled the roof of my mouth with this metal straw. I know, I'm so sorry. And then it was like 5 minutes to beginners, and then the stage manager was like, are you gonna go on? What do we do? And I was like, it's fine. And so my best friend, who passed away recently, and this is such an odd tribute to his memory, but he was like, nah, I got it. I know how to solve this. So we went and got a glass of vodka and he said, gargle with the vodka and then we'll have two buckets side stage for you to spit the blood out into in between scenes. And so I gargled with the vodka and it sort of stopped bleeding. And then I did the show and the show was like kind of like a teen slasher movie on stage. And so there was heaps of fake blood in it. And so I, by the end of the show, was just like covered in my own blood and I smelt like vodka. I smelt like an absolute rock star, but but it was a more memorable show, and I have not touched a metal straw since. I still have a scar and everything.
That's just
my worst nightmare.
Isn't it horrific?
Yeah. Seriously. Because that's happened to me before. Like, not to that extent, but even it's really bad. You're so driving and you got your straw in the mouth and you're humming away and then like you go and almost hit the roof of your mouth. And yeah, I don't really use them anymore.
No,
for that exact reason.
I absolutely don't use them. I'd prefer to hum.
Yeah.
just stick to the OG. Yeah,
exactly. So there you go. Be careful with your metal straws, folks.
That's a good PSA. Oh my God.
Yeah. Wow. And like, going on stage with that kind of injury, no one would know. No one in the audience knows. So crazy.
I was running on such adrenaline and it genuinely didn't hurt until we finished and I like walked off stage and I was like, I'm in a world of pain. But it was fine. It healed overnight and, you know, mouth heals quickly.
Oh, wow.
Yes. So there you go.
You are a trooper.
I think I might be Wolverine. Yeah,
maybe.
Seriously, I think.
And nothing bad with that. That is
no,
ideal.
Absolutely not.
Let's move on to like the kind of crux of our interview with you. And one of the things we loved about, you know, following your journey as an artist is the GAIN project that you started and kind of the whole message behind that. And I guess we wanted to ask you, in your time within the industry, what has been your experience with the culture when it comes to body image? And do you think that the performing arts space is becoming body positive?
Look, I think that we have come leaps and bounds from where we used to be. There was a time when somebody very, very close to me, who genuinely out of love, said to me that I needed to get, and they offered to pay to help me get liposuction and a personal trainer and a nose job and breast reduction and to like lighten my hair and permanently straighten it in order to get work in the industry so that I could be like, quote, home and away pretty, which is hilarious because I did end up doing home and away and I, you know, didn't do any of those things. I did get a breast reduction, but that was for health reasons. You know, around that time, I also was, there was a job that was offered to me when I was about 18, as a mermaid, which is so giving away what it is. But whatever, I'm outing them. And then it was taken away because they saw my body in a bikini and they said that I was too voluptuous to be a mermaid on children's television. Mm. And I also did another kids TV series, like a tween kind of show where, you know, halfway through the first season, they spoke to me and said that I had to start like strapping down and binding my breasts because I was inappropriate for children's television because I had too much cleavage. And my point is I don't think that would happen anymore as much, but this is my issue currently. We're seeing more of slightly bigger bodies, slightly. We're seeing more, you know, between size 10 and 12s, which is genuinely a massive step up because we used to only see like size 6 white bodies. But now the danger is that we're trying to rebrand normal into like a size 10, which is still under average. Like there is still an element of unobtainability about it. You know, it's wonderful that we're heralding people like Ashley Graham, who is like one of the highest paid models in history, but people are celebrating her saying, oh my god, there's a real woman, how extraordinary. And it's like, well, sure, she's bigger, she's a size I think American 14 or something, which is like an Australian size 16 or something, but her proportions are insane. Her proportions are just as unobtainable as a, you know, like a size 6 super thin body. It's there's still this like culture of deifying unobtainability in bodies that I think is really dangerous. When I was doing Home and Away, I had a few questions early on that were like, you're so brave to be in a bikini, you know, how do you feel about being an advocate for body positivity? And I would just kind of quietly reply going, that's actually a lovely thing to say, thank you for like calling me an advocate in any way, shape or form. That's lovely. But with all due respect, I'm a tall, slender, size 10 to 12. I am not like an accurate representation of the Australian every woman. Like the average size in Australia is a 10 to 14. So I'm still quite slim for that. And sure, I'm not a size 6, but don't like base normal on me. I don't think we should be basing normal on anything. What I would love to see is more of a celebration of difference. So to answer your question, look, we're getting better, and people are speaking out about it more, which is wonderful, but we've got a long way to go. Yeah, I think hearing, so you hear when you're 18 that mm-hmm. you're too voluptuous for a particular show, and you do a tween show and you're told you have to bind yourself. That those comments, I think, would really take a knock to my self-image and my self-esteem. How did you handle those comments, and how have you come to a place now where you feel like you can accept them and accept who you are without these comments sort of pervading the space that you are, that you're working in?
Oh, look, honestly, I was devastated. I was a people-pleasing, like, insecure 18-year-old who was so desperate to work in the entertainment industry. And I felt like I was so close because I kept being offered things. And then people were saying simply who I was, you know, was too much, or was not beautiful enough, or was not right enough, or was not small enough, or was not something enough. And it, you know, broke my heart. I, like so many women and people, I don't want to like say that men or non-binary people also haven't had like eating disorders, but like so many people in the entertainment industry at that who started young, I had an eating disorder for most of my teens and into my early 20s. It wasn't until the end of my first year of drama school, and I had like gained quite a bit of weight, not like insane amounts, but I was probably the heaviest I'd ever been. But I liked who I was so much. For the first time in my life, I had like been doing work on myself, and I'd surrounded myself with these extraordinary people who were inspiring and you know, made me feel bigger by being with them. And I realized that who I was wasn't what I look like. Who I was wasn't the body that I was in. And really, I had been striving for so long to be the smallest version of myself, and being small is not a good thing. No one wants to be small, regardless of what your actual size is. To be called small is terrible. This is kind of off topic, but on that, I lost a bit of weight recently because I was grieving because my best friend passed away. And someone said to me, as a compliment, and they didn't mean this, you know, they didn't know what they were saying, but someone said to me, "Oh my God, look at you, you're disappearing," as a compliment. And that just like shocked me to my core that we live in a society where someone telling somebody that they're disappearing is a compliment. Like, I want someone to look at me and say, "God, you look enormous." You know, I think that's extraordinary. And it was, so back to what I was saying, after I kind of had that realization of like, oh, cool, I like myself, and that doesn't actually have to do with what I look like. I just started valuing what I can do a whole lot more than what I looked like. And I stopped straightening my hair and I stopped like trying to make myself smaller and my idea of what home and away pretty was. And that was actually when I started getting work, when I was like, oh, cool, this is who I am. Like, I only have this to offer. So let's be like the biggest, fullest version of what this is as possible. Yeah, and it just made me feel full in the best way. We strive, our society tells us to strive to be hungry and to be small and to be like accommodating. And I think that we should be striving to feel full and big and like loud.
Yeah.
And none of that lends itself to diet culture.
No, and I think from what you just said, it's the language around bodies changing, because for me, I went through like a not a major body change in drama school, but a body change for me to realize, and my hips widened. And, you know, I was kind of getting a bit more like, you know, body fat around my hip areas and stuff. And I like will admit, I freaked out because I thought, oh my God, people are going to notice this. And I've gotten to a point now, because I've like done a lot of investment into like my health internally and mentally, that like women's bodies especially will go through so many changes.
Oh God,
it's
yeah.
kind of like if everyone made a comment on how much my body has changed, it would just be, it's crazy, you know. You just don't yeah. want people to like notice because the language around it is bad. But like, you know, I could be super hormonal and put on a few kilos, and that's just like the way that nature works, and then I lose it. Oh. So I was like, oh my God, that looks so much better. It's like, well, oh, can't do anything about that, you know.
Yeah, I actually yeah. learned something recently because I obviously like I have endometriosis and adenomyosis, and I spend like 80% of my life talking about periods. But I learned recently that, like, you know, that kind of, I don't know, abdomen, like that little kind of pocket of fat that most women specifically have around their like abdominal area. We naturally get more of that around our period or when our uterus and ovaries are in a state of distress, because that layer of fat is there to literally protect us. And it's funny, I looked at myself in the mirror because I had a laparoscopy recently, and I was going, oh my God, I criticize myself for that tiny little bit so much, and it's there to protect me. Like, what? It's there that my body is doing something to be like, here, I'm just going to keep you safe. And I'm looking at it going, oh my God, it looks ugly. Like, how awful.
Yeah. It's, and especially with like, I suffer from like IBS and I'm intolerant to a lot of foods because of my gut yeah. bacteria, and I get bloated like most days.
Oh, like no, it's one's
really
business,
a Russian roulette of what's going to make me bloated and whether it will happen, and hating myself for it. And instead of, you know, the energy that I was putting into, oh my God, you look disgusting, in my head, I could have been like, that's interesting. Like, what's happening internally to cause that pain? Not worry about the look, but what am I feeling? Am I feeling okay? Because then that's yeah. something that I don't need to necessarily be alarmed about. But like, what is the feeling? Like, what's going on inside? And that's been a yeah. massive hurdle for me personally. And I wish there was a better language around how we talk about our bodies. And you know, maybe we just don't need to mention how people are looking, you know? Like, why do we feel like we always need to say something about how good someone looks, or, oh, you look a bit sick. It's like, oh, I just don't have makeup on.
Oh my God.
Purely and simply is that, you know, things like that.
Yeah, it's like the way that we compliment people should be different. I love hearing it when someone says, like, you look so strong, or like, or even if you're concerned about someone, instead of saying you look sick, being like, you seem low energy, or you sit, like, just everything that we do when we comment on another person is so often about the way that someone looks. So it would be so awesome if we could speak to people in a way that is like, your energy seems off, or your, like, I don't know, anything other than what people look like. It's just so exhausting. Jamila Jamil talks about body neutrality, which I think is really interesting, meaning like, you don't need to love yourself all the time. It's impossible to love yourself all the time. Like, I'm sitting here, you know, trying to gently preach body positivity, but at the same time, like, I have moments when I look in the mirror and I'm like, oh, I don't like that, and I wish that was different, and I want blah 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 blah. But everybody has that. If we could just look at our bodies and sit in our bodies as the vehicles as they are, as opposed to the, you know, we treat our bodies like the cover of our book, and like we don't have any pages inside, which is like, assume that people are going to read your book, you know?
Yeah,
absolutely. I think on that, sometimes I look at myself and I go, oh my God, I look amazing. I love the way I look. I love my body. And other days, my body is just my vessel on this journey. And it just gets me from A to B. And I feel grateful that I have it. But yeah, absolutely. I think there's a lot of internalized misogyny as well that we as women hold. And we have that when we talk to each other as well. The way we relate to each other as women, particularly in this industry, I think needs to change. Even sort of going back to drama school, the dressing room talk that would happen was really sort of toxic in a way that we didn't even really realize. sort of getting changed and going, oh God, I feel so fat compared to that girl. I don't want to get changed next to them.
Yeah.
Standing and comparing your bodies is, it's just so warped. I just go, what?
Yeah.
What the hell? What are we doing?
I sort of touched upon this before, but I think like comparison is so, so dangerous and so toxic because it doesn't make sense. Like, it's the weirdest thing that we do. Even if we see like, oh my God, that person has like the exact same body as that person, or that person is the same size as that. It doesn't, like, our bodies are so incredibly different that comparing is so harmful. Because there is no way that anyone is going to win at comparing. There is no good that comes out of comparing. It's just, I so hope for a future where we can just stand there and appreciate the differences as opposed to comparing the similarities, because the similarities that you think are there actually aren't. You know, like, that's part of why I started the GAIN project, is that I love seeing I use the word differences, and I think that a lot of people will substitute that for flaws, but I really, really like seeing people's differences. Like, I really like, even if it's small details or scars or something, I find it so fascinating to see bits of and I don't know, kind of moments on people's bodies that I don't have, because it all tells a story, and our bodies are so much more than like a capitalist vessel for clothes. like they carry us through so much and they change so much, and that's so cool. Like, that's so extraordinary. I used to work in retail, like every single human in the entertainment industry, and or hospo, but God, I'm terrible at hospo. But I worked at Lorna Jane, the like fitness wear brand, which you both obviously know. There was this one woman who I will never forget who walked in, because obviously being a like fitness wear label, you would have so many people walk through criticizing themselves or buying a size that's too small in the hope of fitting into it after they lose weight and all of that crap, which I would just not have a bar of. I would just like loudly announce that I'm like, I don't accept like negative body talk in these change rooms. That's like my policy, love it or leave it. But there was this one woman who walked in so excited, and she was, and I was like, what can I do for you, blah blah blah, and she goes, I've gained a bunch of weight and my clothes don't fit me, and so now I get to buy a whole new wardrobe. And I was like, what?
Oh, I love that.
An awesome way of thinking about it. And she was like, yeah, it's so cool. And she was like putting on these tights and she goes, oh my God, I've got a butt. And she was so excited, and she was just relishing in this change. And she was like, well, yeah, this change isn't going to last forever. I might get bigger, I might get smaller. All we can do is relish in what we have when we have it, because it'll, you know, we'll get scars and we'll have babies or not have babies, or like, you know, it's just, our bodies are so much more than what they look like. And totally. I wish that we can all see them for that.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that.
Something that I started doing, which has not been great for my bank account, but something that I started doing in like eating disorder recovery, is I don't buy anything unless it's like going to fit me, like regardless of if I fluctuate a bit. And I also, like, if I feel kind of crappy about myself a day or whatever, I will quite frequently be like, okay, I feel not good in my body. I'm going to go out and I'm going to buy something for this body that I have right now. And when I put it on, it'll make me feel good, even though I didn't feel good in my body before. And just be like, look at me investing in this body that I have right now. I'm not investing in trying to change it. I'm not investing in the body that I had when I was 18. I'm investing in the body that I have right now, that I may not be super friendly with currently, but I will be in 10 minutes after I buy these new like corduroy pants.
Yeah,
that's beautiful. That. And I think, I mean, you've sort of touched on our other question that we had for you, sort of how do you personally reclaim autonomy over your body when you feel it's been almost politicized within this industry? And how do you get that confidence back as an artist?
Yeah.
In regards to your body image.
I think the first thing that came to mind, I think I kind of use it as a weapon. I feel quite empowered by the fact that my body isn't necessarily for everyone, but everyone's body isn't for everyone. I felt so strong doing Home and Away, a show that I was told that I was never going to be on because I was not Home and Away pretty, meaning I was too big and too ethnic. And I went on and I was, you know, what, a size like 10 to 12 at the time with my like big curly hair. And I had people asking me about like being brave in a bikini. And there is something so fueling, I guess, about going, I actually don't think that I'm brave. Like, I think I'm just putting on a bikini and doing my job. There is something quite extraordinary about having a whole bunch of people judging your body and you going, cool, I'm just going to take that judgment and I'm going to chuck it over there because I have no need for it. It doesn't serve me. What does serve me is my own attitude to my body in spite of and in response to that, which is one of like love and appreciation and respect, and knowing that my worth is not dependent on what I look like. It's what I can do and what I can do with my body and what my body can do that like that I don't even know about. If you ever feel like uncomfortable in your body, this is something that I realized recently. Cool new tip. Think about all of the things that are happening inside your body that you don't understand. Like, as I said recently, like I had a laparoscopy for my endometriosis recently. And I had this moment when I was like, oh God, I'm so tired, but I haven't done anything. Like, I haven't been burning energy or whatever. And I was like, no, I'm tired because my body is healing inside. It is healing inside me right now, and that is burning energy. And I don't know what that looks like. That's so cool. And so, like, yeah, I guess claim autonomy over your body by respecting it for yourself and for no one else. Your body isn't anyone else's business. And for them to claim that it is their business is entirely their wrong. So that's, yeah, totally on them. And luckily, we're kind of living in a world now, almost, or a little bit more than it used to be, where if somebody makes a comment about your body on set or in a rehearsal room, you can like take it to the powers that be and be like, this person said this, it's not okay, do something about it. Mm-hmm. Like, you have the right to do that. I think that women in particular thought or were led to believe that if someone told you that you had to lose weight for a role, then you had to lose weight for a role. Or if somebody made a sexual comment about you on set or in a rehearsal room, then that like it was your prerogative or your responsibility as a woman to like take it on the chin. But that's thank God for the extraordinary strong, you know, women and a lot of men and like people who have spoken out about this in the past few years. But you have a right to your body that nobody else does. So if somebody tells you to do something, question it or say no straight away. God, if somebody told me to lose weight for something, I would immediately question why. If there was a valid reason for story wise or whatever, I'd maybe consider it. But most of the time, like, look, if my mentality to the whole like lose weight for the historical accuracy or the story accuracy or whatever is like, if Margot Robbie, one of the most beautiful humans in the world, can play Queen Elizabeth, who is like one of the like typically most ugly women in the world, and that was believable, you probably don't have to lose the 5 kilos to be a like believable as, yeah, I don't know, something. Like, it's, you know, put it into perspective. How concerned with reality are we really?
That's so true. That's quite pertinent, isn't it? That's beautiful. Yeah, I love that idea. I love that idea of how you're sort of claiming autonomy over your body, and it's sort of a big stuff you to this industry, and it's exciting. I'm excited that we have women like you and people like you, and even, you know, Jamila Jamil listening to that podcast as well.
God, I love her.
Right? She's amazing.
She's my hero.
She's incredible. We're talking about it now. We're talking about it. It's not, yeah, it's not taboo. You can put your hand up and say, I don't feel comfortable about this. And
yeah,
and even maybe 5 years ago, we couldn't do that within this industry. God, yeah. So,
oh, I mean, like, I talked about how, like, the show that I was doing where they asked me to, like, bind my breasts down, I didn't question it at all. I apologized. Mm. I was like, I'm so sorry that I look the way that I do. I'm so sorry that I'm inappropriate and I've inconvenienced you. What can I do to help? And it's like, no, man, take up space. Mm-hmm. Like, that's actually what you're hired to do. I think that people forget that as an actor, you're genuinely being hired to take up space, like, and to take up as much space as possible. When, you know, that thing that people say when they point to someone on stage or on screen and they go, oh my God, they've just got such presence. It's just because they're taking up the space, like, mm, that they have, and taking up as much space as possible. And go, and so part of that, part of your job is to respect your own body and defend it when necessary.
Mm. And not only, like, respecting your body, but respecting you as a person and what you need to, yeah, live a fulfilling and happy life. And if that, yeah, means letting your body just do what it needs to and taking the time out, or, you know, making compromises, you need to do that. You're, especially as an actor, or, you know, people that kind of use their bodies as their product, because that's literally what we do. Mm-hmm. You, yeah, know, you have to put that first. And even just, you know, I've seen a lot in, like, stress and the effect that it has on your body. And, oh, God, coming, yeah, out of COVID, like, the amount of people who probably were going through intense stress and anxiety because of the whole pandemic, and maybe still have a flow and effect of it now, and they haven't acknowledged it, and then they hate themselves for their body reacting to that trauma that it's going through. It's, yeah, it's just a horror, and it's giving it, well, time to heal. It just needs it.
Yeah. I mean, one of the reasons that I started the GAIN Project is because I was hearing people talking about their weight. Like, I was hearing people talking about their weight like it was 5 years ago. Everyone was saying, like, defining their entire year in an international pandemic about how much weight they'd lost or gained. And that was so scary to me. I was like, oh God, we're taking steps back because we have all been through so much. How can we be talking about our weight again? And then it kind of dawned on me that, of course, we're going to be talking about our weight because that's the laziest and the easiest thing to stress about. Like, I don't know about you, but I find that I know that I have a moment thinking about it, being insecure about my weight or my shape or my something, when I'm stressed or anxious or dealing with something else that's a lot harder to deal with. It is so much easier to go, oh, I'm anxious. I'm going to decide that I'm anxious about my weight. And a way to fix that is to, like, you know, work out longer or not eat this or some other harmful diet, like, thing that's been fed to us. But that's not at all what it is. That's why eating disorders happen. That's why people end up going, cool, I know how to fix my anxiety. I'll stop eating or I'll work out more. And then they lose unhealthy amounts of weight, or they binge and then they gain and lose weight and they do damage to their bodies. And they're still dealing with whatever trauma that they had before. Like, I think it's such an important thing for people to kind of be able to take a step back from themselves when they have those moments of insecurity in their body and they think it's weight related, and just take a second to go, is it actually weight related, or am I just craving control?
Mm-hmm.
I have a, yeah,
Yeah, like I have a beautiful, beautiful, wonderful friend who also went to Whopper called Sky Becker, who is like in eating disorder recovery, and she's my, like, you know, eating disorder sponsor. She's incredible. Mm-hmm. But I called her after what I mentioned briefly before, like I lost weight because I was grieving, because I was just like too sad to eat properly because my best friend died very suddenly. And I called her up when I noticed myself doing it. And I was like, I am so aware of the fact that I don't want to deal with my, like, the loss of my friend. And so my brain is going back to old habits of weight insecurity and obsessing over food. And it was actually really, like, crappy for the moment that it was happening, but it was cool that I was able to step back and go, oh, that's what this is. This is not about my body. This is not about how I feel about myself or what I look like. And nothing is going to get solved if I lose weight. This is just a habit of going, the easiest thing to worry about right now is my weight. And so I just kind of sat with it for a second and went, okay, well, now that I know what that is, I'm going to eat a, like, wonderful, nourishing meal that's going to make me feel good. And I'm going to reminisce about my friend and cry if I need to and call friends and, you know, deal with my shit the way that we all need to.
And that is so brave within itself to sort of acknowledge that what you're going through isn't linked to your weight and it was more about control. I think that's so true for a lot of situations, but that's amazing and how wonderful that you have a really great sort of group that you can go to as well and be able to chat to about that kind of thing. It's really important.
I think that a lot of people feel a lot of shame about talking about body insecurity, and that's something that we really need to change. Like, talking about insecurity is really important because it kind of takes away the negativity around the word fat, because we so often use the word fat as an insult when it's not. Like, it's a descriptor. There are, like, so many incredible healthy fat people that the fact that we use fat as an insult is just, it's just wrong, really. But the more we start using the correct language around it, the more the discussion will open, and then our bodies will be a little bit less two-dimensional in the way that we're, or like, we'll approach our bodies in a less two-dimensional way, if that makes sense.
And going off of that, with your kind of, you've been so open and generous with your experience with endometriosis. And I guess, you know, we have a really dear friend who's in our class who suffers from it quite badly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when we're in first year and second year, it was kind of, oh, I wish there was someone who would, you know, speak out about this, especially as a performer and someone that has to dance all the time. You know, it's so debilitating. And I think sharing your story of your struggle or your insecurity or anything like that, you don't know how much that can have a flow on effect for other people and how positive that can be. And I don't suffer from it personally, but seeing your story, I'm like, oh my gosh. Yep. You know, those girlfriends that I have, whether they're performing or not, that's just so powerful, and it can allow them to go through their journey more freely and not feel that shame around it for something that they cannot control, you know?
But, well, thank you. Shame is like the key word. I was in pain for years and years and years and years, and I didn't even consider that it could be endometriosis because, like, it wasn't something that I talked about. Like, periods were not something that were talked about, because they were seen as this, like, secret shameful thing, which is so weird. like half the population bleeds. It's so chill. Like, just, like, it's
it's just bleeding. Like,
yeah,
there are grosser, we talk, like, there are grosser things that we talk about, really. It's just because it's something that's so inherently feminine that we've decided to associate shame with it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I just think that it's, again, I guess it's same with the bodies of like normalizing difference. I just want to normalize the conversation around menstruation. There are so many conversations that should be had. I mean, God, strictly from the point of like, I want to hear more people's period stories. Period stories are the best. Like, there are some incredible period stories that no one is sharing because it's meant to be secret or hidden or shameful. But like, also just from a medical point of view, there are so many people who are living in such pain who don't have any answers and might not get answers for the rest of their life because we don't have accurate, we don't have enough medical research. I was talking to someone recently and I found out that the largest scale like research, oh my God, what's the word? Like, I guess the largest scale research. The largest scale research on endometriosis is
studying.
How is that study? Thank you. Yeah. There we go. The largest scale research study on endometriosis is the effects that endometriosis has on the cis male partners of people with endometriosis. Isn't that wild? And I mean, to be fair, like that's important. I'd like to like investigate that. Shouldn't be the largest study. Like, maybe let's like understand endometriosis a little bit more. Maybe let's have some sort of treatment that isn't opioids and surgery or a hysterectomy. Like, there should be so many more options, and there just aren't. And my theory is the more we talk about it and the more people speak out and they're like, hey, I'm in pain all the time and it's like hindering my ability to do my job and to live my life, maybe the medical community will start paying attention and go, oh cool, people are in pain, we should do some more things about that.
Mm. How has having endometriosis affected your career, and when you've had to put your hand up and say, I'm not feeling great, I need to take time out, how has that been received?
Oh, totally honestly, I've never said I'm in too much pain, I need to take time out. Mm. I have, however, had to do auditions and go on stage and film things on like some pretty strong painkillers, which as if you can imagine as an actor, like having something, a substance in you that is like altering your state, which is altering your ability to do your job, is awful. Like, as a like self-confessed, I was just talking to someone who has like confessed to being someone who has like things with control, having to take a painkiller that alters my own control over my emotions, which is, you know, your craft as an actor, as wanky as that sounds, that sucks. But I, you know, there's kind of not an option. Like, I truly, truly, truly wish there was, but, and if somebody, you know, listens to this and says there is an other option, like, please, please tell me. But where we are right now and why I feel so passionately about talking about it as openly as I do is, as actors and performers and in many other fields, you have endometriosis or adenomyosis or polycystic ovaries or any sort of reproductive illness and you're in pain and you have to go to work, you know, you take the strong painkillers and you go to work. And if you can't, then you can't, and you pray to God that someone's going to understand. But yeah, it's real tricky. It's really, really tricky. There isn't a solution yet. That's why I just think that people with uteruses are like, have an extraordinary pain threshold because we have no choice. And that's kind of it.
I want people to have a choice. I want there to be another option.
Yeah. I think maybe even not having many women at the helm of many arts productions as well is hard too, because I feel like men don't really understand what that would, I mean, I don't even really understand what it would feel like to have endometriosis. My mum has it, but I really don't know the extent of pain that you must feel. So yeah, I think it would need to go down to that, right? Like we need to talk to producers and directors about this and leave space for rest and recovery and being able to feel like you can leave when you're in pain.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, like I've worked with some extraordinary female and male like producers and directors that if I had said like I'm in pain, I need to rest, or I'm in pain and I need to go off or whatever, they would be supportive of that. But one, I think that as a woman, and you know what, actually that's a generalization, but I've found that myself as a woman, I feel the need to be stronger than I am or stronger than is expected so that I can convince people that I can do the job and that I deserve to be in the room, which is like very problematic thinking, but that is like, I realize that it's problematic, but that's like kind of the way that my brain has been conditioned, being grown, like being raised in a like very male dominant entertainment industry, because my parents work in the entertainment industry. But I also just think that it's kind of in the hands of the medical community. Like the more we just really, really desperately need more research. We need more options for pain management and treatment for reproductive issues. It's kind of as simple as that. Like there are extraordinary like producers and directors and people in higher positions in the entertainment industry who would give you the time off when you need the time off. But if that time off is, you know, weeks and weeks and days over months and months because you keep needing to have surgeries or you keep needing to take these painkillers or you keep needing to like find other options, like that's really hard to deal with. So totally, I think that there should be more of an allowance for like time and space for people with reproductive issues in rehearsal rooms and on set. You're absolutely right, but ultimately more treatment options would be great. More research would be great.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, that totally. Yeah,
there's a way to go for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm a go but, and get my degree and become a doctor.
Yeah, right.
Like it's all well and good problems for me to say this, but like, you know.
Yeah, 100%. There's a way to go. There's a way to go.
Yeah.
But I guess but we kind of have to start wrapping up. Yeah. Yeah. For sure. We have to start wrapping up the interview, which is so, because we could just talk to you all day, but I guess bringing it back to art, what brings you the most joy as an artist?
Sharing. There's sharing. That's it. I think that's why I'm an artist. That's why I'm a performer. That's why I write. There is no better feeling in the world than the moment on set between when you start the scene and when someone calls action and there's like just kind of a hum of silence and everyone in the room is focusing their energy into the same thing. That's sharing. There's nothing more magical than being on stage and sharing a story and sharing the work that you've all been working on for however many weeks and sharing an experience with all these people in the audience looking up at you and you're somehow kind of breathing the same air and sharing in an experience. It's uniting. That's what brings me joy about being an artist.
It's such a beautiful, special community. Absolutely. I love that. I love sharing.
I love sharing.
I love sharing.
I love sharing. Another question we had was, what advice would you give to your younger self knowing what you know now?
Take up space. Stop apologizing. One day you'll really, really love your big eyebrows and hair and lips. Stop plucking your eyebrows, for God's sake. take up space. Small is an insult. Don't be afraid to be as big as possible and value who you are and what you do over what you look like, because what you look like is simply a product of who you are. Yeah. Yeah. And also, you're amazing. A nerd, own it.
And our final. Yes. And yes. Our last question is, what are you excited about in the future of the industry, and what do you think still needs change?
It's kind of the same thing. I'm excited about the exploration and embracing of everything that's different. And I think that I really mean different as in terms of things that we haven't seen before. I really like exciting casting. I like exciting storytelling. But that's also what we need more of. I'm excited because we're heading in the direction of celebration of difference, and celebrating the different means that there is in turn just less comparison. But that's exactly what we need more of. And also I'm more excited for new stories. I think that coming out of COVID, we will probably see less remakes, or hopefully we'll see less remakes and less remounting of the same stories that we've heard for decades and decades. I'm really keen to hear new voices and, new voices leading us into this new world that we're living in. I think there's the time and the space for it now.
There is. Mia, yeah. Thank you so much for talking to us today. It's been an absolute joy.
Thank you
joy.
For having me. You guys are wonderful. Thank yes, you so, thank so you. Much for doing this and using your voices and platforms for such an extraordinary thing. Y'all are great.
You are great.
Big love. Big love.
Thank you.
We absolutely loved that chat. I feel like we say this every week. Absolutely loved it. But to be honest, we pick really good people every week. So I'm not surprised. This week it was a really personal kind of one for me. I have had so many kind of, challenges with my body image and still do today. And it's really nice to hear stories and share stories and just be reminded like there is more to what we do than just what we look like. And I think it's something that we always need to refresh on. And it's so nice to see someone who's so open and vulnerable with their stories. So I can't thank Mia enough for coming on here and sharing what she did. It was amazing.
I absolutely agree. I think this topic is one that everyone can relate to, no matter what you look like, what gender you are. It's a really, really important topic. And I'm really grateful that we got to speak to Mia about it.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Company. If you enjoyed this episode, let us know on our Instagram @companypod or our Facebook page. Also, feel free to leave a review on our iTunes or Spotify. Big shout out to our producing team, me, David Duquettis, and our fabulous hosts, Georgia Kennedy and Tiana Catalano. Hope to see you next time.